Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem and the land of Israel on the Land of Israel Network to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to the Begin Center, one of my little hideaways when I'm in town. And here at the Begin Center, of course, named after Menachem Begin, one of the great prime ministers of the State of Israel, there's an amazing conference going on right now, which is called the Jordan Option, the Jordan Alternative, or Jordan is Palestine. It's all about the idea that maybe Jordan, which is already in fact a Palestinian state, or de facto Palestinian state, could become in fact a Palestinian state, giving Arabs that live in the West Bank of Israel citizenship of Jordan, while they would remain residents here in Judea and Samaria in the West Bank. Of course, that conference, that idea ruffles a lot of feathers, and it's a lot of fun to ruffle feathers. If you're into the ruffle feathering business, then you know why I'm here also. In fact, I actually begged to get on this conference. I'm like, please let me be part of this conference, just so that we could hash out new ideas. But maybe those ruffled feathers actually will lead to some positive change and some decalcification in the political system in Israel. I'm joined here in the synagogue of the Begin Center by our beloved Rabbi Mike Foy. Rabbi Mike, shalom and welcome.
Shalom, Yishai. It's good to see you.
Thanks for running down here and meeting me here. Sorry about the delay as well. We're in a little synagogue. It's a little bit arkish. Do you see that?
It's kind of a self-contained unit.
It looks like a little, and it's got wood paneling. It's got an arc.
It's got a narrow front.
I could totally not
an arc.
Not that the arc actually famously did not have any navigational
equipment.
It was just a floating
wooden box.
Yeah, that's right. A little arc.
Had a window.
It had a window, and we're going to talk about. I want to talk about this Torah portion, which is the Torah portion of Noach. I remember last year we talked about that what I do usually during this Torah portion is I go to the zoo or go to someplace to see animals. And you said that you have some kind of rainbow-colored food.
We have a rainbow meal, yes.
Rainbow meal.
Yes, every year. Already planning it.
Ah, rainbow meal. That sounds so rainbow-ish. That's really great. And right now, as we're here in the Begin Center, I really feel like it's gotten us in the mood because it's really this like wood-paneled, small little seed-like arc. And on today's show, I want to talk about, I have so many things going on right now, but as I was driving, I was listening to the Torah portion. That's what I do sometimes on YouTube. I put on just the cantillation, the Torah reading. There's great stuff on YouTube. And I was thinking about four dichotomies that I want to talk with you about today. I'm going to say them right now, and then we'll touch on them
in terms of,
okay, here we go. One dichotomy is that Noah is a great righteous person of his generation. But then at the end, he kind of like messes up and breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And like at the end, you kind of see him up, all the way up to castrated and certainly
drunk, wallowing in his own blood.
Right. Like something is it's definitely
a strange end to the righteous.
Right. It's an unseemly type of end.
Oh, that's for sure.
Right. So you start kind of high, you end a little low. That's a bummer. That's one. Another one is the rainbow that we're going to learn about. Well, the rainbow is very beautiful. I mean, not subjectively speaking, but I could say with assurance that the majority of humanity thinks that it is a pretty thing.
It's cool. Yeah,
the rainbow. And yet there's some kind of relationship to the rainbow, which is always weird in Judaism.
Like, don't look at that.
Don't tell anybody that there's a rainbow out there. Don't look at it straight on. And certainly it's a sign of destruction. I destroyed. Maybe I'm even angry right now, but I promise I wouldn't destroy. Here's the sign. So there's a dichotomy in the physical. It's like supposed to be something you're attracted to and be like, hey, everybody, look at rainbow.
Pretty.
But the sign is like, oh, yeah.
Oh, and we blew it.
You blew it. You blew it. I'm angry. Maybe right now I'm even a little angry. For example, in the time of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, there's a medrash that says there never a rainbow appeared because God's like fury was somehow quelled. So that's dichotomy number two. Dichotomy number three. The Torah portion begins with a deluge and a destruction of the world. And yet at the end, we learn about this, let's call it uber mechanized society that builds this super tall tower.
Right.
And it becomes like, it's almost like Germanic. Like you could really, the Torah is very, it's laconic. It doesn't use a lot of words when it comes to tell us that story. But like you could imagine it's like a very robotic society building this big. And there's a lot of descriptions in the Midrash that people were kind of cold. If somebody would trip and fall, they would just put a block of cement on top of him, no problem. You could imagine that it's a bit like kind of a sci-fi.
Fascist.
Yeah, like a Nazi/robotic, some kind of robotic world, and there's no heart.
Human construction.
Right,
project.
And they're like, we shall kill God. Right? It's like there's, we believe in nothing. You know, it's like a little bit of, there's something to that. So like the world, like the economy there is, first the world is totally destroyed, then it becomes super mechanized and it's out to destroy God. It's like a weird, and also that Torah portion doesn't, that part about the Tower of Babel doesn't have to be there.
It seems like an epilogue.
Right, it's an add-on, and it's to me it's dichotomous. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the last dichotomy is about the and maybe this is the first great way to start, which is the Tzohar itself, the light source in the Ark. Because on the one hand, this light source is described as a powerful glowing gem. I would like to think of it as a kind of radioactive gem, providing heat. You know, it's like a radioactive engine. It has its own power source in the time of darkness. It radiates heat.
It was a nuclear powered arc.
Right. It's a nuclear powered arc. It's got a little bit of a thing inside which gives off light and heat and sustains.
Mm.
It's like an internal energy source.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's also described as a window. Right? So it's got two sides to it. One, the energy comes from the outside in, and one it's from the inside, maybe out or just inside. Intergenerated. So those are some of the dichotomies I've identified in the story of Noah. And let's just start off by saying Noah is about the world going bad, and Noah being this soul family that is going to be the Messiah who's going to save the world.
I mean, I think part of the underlying construct, which is important to keep in mind if we're going to engage all these dichotomies, which can we call them an octoconomy if there are four of them, is that Noah comes on the heels of creation, not just creation as a phenomenon, but creation as a story. And it's important to remember that the story of creation begins in chaos and is progressively moving toward order. And that sort of final image, at least in the first story of creation, in the first chapter, is an orderly creation with humanity standing on top. Right? The kifshua, right? Humanity is meant to sort of subdue creation. You can picture like all those old Zionist photographs with the guy holding his arm up, and you know what I'm talking about. And here in Noah, the entire process reverses itself. And it's important, by the way, of course, what gets pushed back in that construction is the waters of chaos. Here, all of creation gets reduced down to like a 300 amma by what, 50 amma chip of wood, and the waters of chaos now well up from underneath, and human experience proves to be like a little like leaf on the water.
At leaf on the water, I have a very strong sense, every Parshas Noach, that it's more like a seed on the water.
Okay, seed, leaf, but
it's
my point...
It's like flowing data point
okay,
on the world of destruction.
Okay, in its potentiality, but my point is that there's always a question of which world we live in. Do we live in a world where we believe that things are orderly and we stand on top of a sort of hierarchical power structure which allows us to maintain order and a sense of security? Or do we sense that the world in which we live is actually chaotic and any sort of meaning or being that we're able to bring to bear is...
Tangential?
Or self-constructed. Uh-huh. We're keeping afloat. Mm. But that the baseline reality is chaos. And you see how these...
That's a great question.
You know, so these two are, I think, two poles of the human condition.
For example, I work in Hebron,
mm-hmm.
and it is 100% a chaotic place.
Oh, yeah.
But I always feel, it's you're going to love this. It says in the Zohar that when Ephron the Hittite looked at the Machpelah field, he saw, here's the words of the Zohar, tohu vavohu.
Oh, yeah.
He saw chaos. And when Abraham saw... the same field. He saw the tombs of Adam and Eve.
Right.
He saw
the gates
order.
Of the Gan Eden. Right. Right. So I think that this is part of the underlying structure, which, if not answers, at least serves as the frame for your question. Right. Let's take the Tzohar, right? This light source, as you so rightly called it. So there are two ways a person can walk in the world. You know, does my light and heat, does my life come from within me and I generate it outward?
Right.
Right? Or do I have to reach outside of myself and open up some portal to let the world shine in?
Right.
Without any judgment, one way or the other. Those are two ways to walk in the world.
Right.
Right? Is Noah assuming that when he opens up the window, all that would come in is the chaos and rain? I mean, think about it. It's a little bit foolish to spend all that time building the ark, sealing it inside and out, et cetera. And then, yeah, here, now put a big hole in it. Granted, it's on top. not on bottom.
Well, that's a signal that this womb state and seed state is not forever. Like I'm going to want you to come out. And in fact, one of the problems that the animals have at the end of the story is that they don't want to come out.
Right.
The animals, of course, I'm not going to go over the story that I hope you all know. You have to see the movie, right? It's like they come in 2x2 or 7x7 for the holy animals. However they came in, once the thing started again, it's like Saturday night. It's like you don't want to go back into the week.
That's right.
It's like you don't want to come out of the ark.
We're coming out of the ultimate Saturday night in the last month of festivals. I know the
festivals
feeling.
And holiness and there's even a sense maybe that God made the festivals a little bit extra so that at the end you'd be like, oh my God. And you said it to me. I think I called you the other day.
Hog fatigue.
And you said to me, I'm so happy my kids are going back to a framework. I'm scared.
Everybody out of the house.
Right.
Right. No, but. You see how that leaving the window, if that's what the tsar is not just a matter of the sort of temporary nature of the womb-like state they're in, but it's also God's clear statement to Noah, and it's not the ark that keeps you safe. Right? The reality of the world outside you is that it is chaotic. Right? The waters of the deep have indeed taken over, and it's really me that keeps you safe. So unless you come to believe in the strength of your hands and your own might...
Well, you can't think that in the ark. You can't even navigate.
Right, but at the same time, he built it. And he spent 100 years building it.
Right.
And presumably he built it well. And God said, I'm sure that'll stand up to all the waters of the world. Now put a hole in it.
Uh-huh.
I put a hole in it so you can see me. So mm-hmm. I can send you what you actually need inside there.
By the way, the Medrash says that there was another hole. And that other hole, I love this little hole. There was a little hole because there was a giant hanging on to your big ship there. And the giant's name was Og. And
he's got to eat.
He's got to eat. Noah made a little hole and he fed him. And that, to me, it's a great... And Og survived this whole flood by hanging out to the back of the ark. He was floated for all those days and ate those little morsels that Noah fed him. To me, that is, you know, the American expression, a monkey on my back. It's like I've got a Yetzer Hara. It's like an Og. I've got the evil inclination. It's got a little hole, got a little portal, and I feed it. And it's a giant hanging on to my ship there.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's an interesting image there in terms of the consistency of the sages. Oh, we're always carrying... something on our back.
Right.
They say we also brought Avodah Zarah, but we brought idolatry out with us from Egypt.
Right. Well, here we go. So let's talk about that. Good. You nailed it. And I'm here at the Begin Center with Rabbi Mike Foyer. We're talking about the Torah portion of Noah. You nailed it, Rabbi Mike, when you brought in this imagery. Noah is a guy who is the proverbial righteous man in a broken generation. And he's the diamond in the rough. And yet when he comes out the other end, in some sense, he has brought with him some of the depravity of previous generations or something like that. Like there's something, maybe he's got PTSD. I don't know what. But he's got something. And the Torah ends with this man who has probably the most approbations in the Torah.
Sure.
The righteous man, I've seen you righteous in this generation and all that. And then he comes out, and then when he's just starting his generations,
first thing he does is plant a vineyard and get good.
That's
and
okay.
Drunk.
Yeah, plant a vineyard's all good. Beautiful, you're planting the world. But oh, bang, it's misused. You get drunk, and you expose yourself. And,
something fishy happens.
Right.
Well, I think there's two pieces. One is definitely what you said. Whether it's PTSD or whether it's simply the fact that what does it mean to be righteous in your generation? It means that when things hit the fan, he was able to do what needed to be done. But as soon as the pressure let up, he proved himself to be part of his generation. Right? That is one of the ways you can understand. And therefore, once the sort of danger passed and the path was clear, so he went back to that more natural state. But I actually think there's something more profound. Because, the sages go out of their way to ask the question, well, when it says he was righteous in his generation, does that mean he was righteous even though his generation was wicked? And that's super righteous, or it means he was righteous in his generation, but if he had lived in the time of Abraham, so then, he wouldn't have held up. So I think part of the problem that we see in Noah is that he was focused on the symptom and not the issue. What do I mean? God says to him, listen, I'm going to bring a flood, build an ark. So what's the problem in Noah's mind?
How do I get it done fast enough?
Right. There's a flood coming.
Right.
Solution is ark. But the reality is the flood was not the problem. The flood was
I would play the Bill Cosby clip here, but today.
Okay, maybe you can insert it later.
Yeah, no, but you know Bill Cosby and all that.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's a different kind of flood.
It's still a funny scene.
Yeah.
But you get my point is that the flood was not the problem. It was the immorality of humanity.
Right.
And the failure to follow God's vision for what creation was meant to be, which was the problem. And Noah doesn't address that. Yeah. He addresses the symptom. His solution is oriented toward the symptom. So as soon as the symptom goes away, he's left with the same problem.
Or he's into self-survival. You know?
No, but I mean, that would not make him righteous.
But why is he the carrier of that very depravity?
Because he is a product of the problem, just like the rest of his generation. Now, he was able to listen to God, meaning let's not knock getting rid of the symptoms. Anyone who's ever taken a couple Advil when they have a headache and it's helped them get through the day knows that getting rid of the symptoms is not all bad, but it doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
Meaning, what would have solved the problem, perhaps? What do we see Avram? When God stands up in a parallel scene and says to Avram, I'm going to destroy the wicked, what does he do?
He goes to bat for the wicked.
That's right. He says, that's not the way we want to run the world.
Right.
The one thing that Noah never does is stand up and try to defend the world to God. God says, I'm bringing a flood. Build me an ark. And Noah says, how big, Lord? And that's it. And I really think that is the reason that when the threat passes, when the symptom is gone, he goes right back to the behavior that caused the depravity in the first place.
I would say also that I agree with you. Of course, I do. But additionally, I think that it's also about two different times in this world.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Jews submerge or compact themselves into a form that could travel throughout history through the galut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Ark. The Ark is keep it in the ghetto, keep it in the synagogue, keep it small, keep it tight, keep it inside with our little light on the inside, with our little window on the world, whatever it is. And then there's a time when the Ark lands back in the land of Israel after a dark history, after a flood of history. And then it's time to unpack those bags, time to plant those things, time to be those, not the seed people, but the big sprouting plant. And I think that we're exactly in the period where we're coming out of that ark. Some of us don't want to come out of the ark.
Yep.
Some of us do not want to come out of the ark. We know the ark. The ark is safe. The ark is good. But that's also the transition between times, between Noah time, Galut time, and Abraham time, which is Land of Israel time. And I think that's a period we're living in. What about the rainbow? You come out of the ark, and God basically annihilated mankind.
Yeah,
like he's drowned them all.
Everybody's gone.
The
animals too.
You think about the drowning also. There's a word inside the Torah portion which is like they decomposed kind of. You know, they became.
It was like everything got wiped away.
Yeah, just kind of like. Remember those old Etch-a-Sketches and you shook them up?
Sure, we have one.
You start again. Just start again.
That's exactly what it was.
You know, you start again. You must have to have some PTSD a little bit from that. I mean, I don't, you know. But
everyone he ever knew, after all, is gone.
Right. And then God says, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to do that again either because I have a better plan. I'm going to start it up right. I'm going to bring Abraham in the world. And we learned last week's Torah portion, the first Torah portion of the Torah, we learned that when the story of mankind is told, it's called Behi Baram, when God created the world. But the word Behi Baram also is the same letters as Avraham. I created the world for Abraham. Like when I recreated the world in this case, like it's for, and we learn about Abraham, right, Avram at the very end of this Torah portion, who kind of like, that's what the world is going, that the whole process of Abraham and Torah and the Jewish people and all the way to Messiah starts at the end of this Torah portion. What's the rainbow about, though? What's the rainbow? What does it mean? I mean, what is a rainbow? It's light that gets refracted and broken up, and you kind of see that instead of white light, it's actually broken up into all these marvelous colors. What's
you
that
know,
about?
One of the funny things about a rainbow is that it's one of the only, if not the only, natural phenomena that I'm aware of that needs human perspective in order to exist. You know, you could be standing in one position and I could be standing in another, and I could say, look at that rainbow, and you could look and say, what are you talking about? Right? And because of that, it represents that unique capacity of human consciousness to help to bring creation into being, right? Now, that's a tremendously powerful ability, which is also tremendously destructive. I mean, how could it be that humanity ruined God's plan? Right? You ever think about it? You can look at the Torah as like this one long string of failures. Right? It's like, oh, Adam, don't eat. Oh, gosh. And like, okay, Noah, oh, there comes the flood. And no, at the end of the story, oh, the Tower of Babel. We could go all the way down to the children of Israel. And like, how quick did we build the golden calf after we heard God say, don't do that? Right? And you get this impression that creation is just one string of failures. And we're stuck inside this sort of like post facto ad hoc reality.
And there are people who sometimes see that chaos.
Very much so, and at least early Christianity was built upon that premise that the world is a failure.
Right.
And that humanity is a sinner. And that it was only through God's compassion that we have any chance at all. This is not the way of the Torah. Right? The way of the Torah is that the reason that the Torah presents a narrative which seems to be a long string of failures is that failure is a lechatchila, not a bidyavad. Failure is a desirable part of creation and not just an accident. Well, yeah. I mean, this is what we call failing forward. Right? And by the way, anybody who's ever succeeded at anything in life knows that if you haven't failed once or twice first, you're never getting anywhere. The other way to say this, by the way, if you're not failing at something, then you don't know what you're capable of. You know? And so therefore, in the context of the rainbow is that symbol of being right at the edge. You know? And your consciousness, this rainbow wouldn't exist, says God, if you weren't looking at it. But I don't want you to make the mistake of thinking that your looking at it is what brings it into being. My will is what brings it into being. My will is what brings creation into being. But I've made creation in such a way that I've given you the power to make it what it will be. And so you should see this as a reminder of what happens when I decide to pull my trump card, that I am God after all. Right? And yet my commitment to the fact that I won't do that anymore. That this is the way I made creation. Therefore, don't look at it too closely.
And it does have an amazing blessing also. You know, that God is existent in his sayings. And he
Zocher abrit, ne'eman bebrito, v'kayam b'mamar.
Zocher abrit, he remembers his covenant.
Ne'eman bebrito, which is faithful to his covenant.
Right. V'kayam b'mamar.
And he always does what he said.
Right.
Right? Right, which means on a certain level is that the world can stand up to our failure. Because God's commitment is to existence, right? If you ever want to know what God wants in the world and you're not willing or able to look into the Torah, you simply look at creation and the one thing you can say is God wants life. God wants life.
You know, you never hear people say, well, there's a rainbow, now I remember God. You know, you want people to, you think that the world be like, and in fact, other movements have used the rainbow flag as their flag.
Yes, the sign of diversity.
Right, sign of diversity, right. And also, I think it's also very ironic that the, homosexual, the movement of the homosexual kind of, today it's, homosexual is a very limiting word. Now today it's much more.
And not so PC any longer.
Right, right. Now it's called gay. I remember when gay was bad, homosexual was good. Now today it's the opposite.
You got to keep track of this.
You got to keep, that's right. It's just interesting that somebody would use, that rainbow flag. Sometimes I kind of josh and I say, it's as though, like, don't strike me down, God, you promised, you see?
I mean, it's not just interesting that the word you used was ironic, which is important to note, like, where's the irony, is that according to our sages, that the primary reason that not humanity, but the rest of creation was destroyed, was because species began to break the bounds that God had set and, have sexual relations with each other.
Right.
And it's important on that note to always remember whatever discussion, whatever person's attitude or innate chosen born sexuality, I want to get into that discussion right now, that the Torah's perspective is procreative. Right. And so therefore, sexuality, which has its own beautiful role in self-expression, is always subordinate to the ultimate mission of bringing more life into the world. And that's one of the great challenges of sort of placing a level of gay physical intimacy on the same plane as intimacy between people who, at least in theory, can bring about life.
Right. And that life, that sexual act of that may have pleasure in it, has a lot of responsibility.
Sure.
The linkage of a relationship and then that procreative life thing. There's a lot of baggage that comes with that pleasure.
It is a context which, I mean, this is one of the reasons also that the notion of birth control is so fraught within Jewish law. not just because of technical issues, but because of the very question of what does it mean to remove this intimate, intense act from at least its potential consequences? What becomes of it?
The animals are all there. And, you know, a lot of people have a problem with can all the animals actually fit there? And there's many different kinds of answers. I personally have this really, and I think I told you last year as well, and I found this in Chassidut, also in Chassidus, that really they became more like data, their genetic code. Their, you know, I have this kind of far side type of image in my head that Noah is this great chemist, and you see him with many, many
test tubes,
and basically he's reduced the animal to its idea, right? To its idea, to its data, what it is, and then just reanimate it.
That's a fascinating notion, because what it does is it places Noah in the opposite position of Adam. Because the first thing that we see Adam do, the way he exercises after God says that he was created in the image of God, the way he exercises that first is by giving names to the animals. Meaning what? Taking their abstract essence and giving them specific form. Now what you're saying is that Noah does the opposite. He reduces them back to that sort of essence in order to await a new creation.
And then it makes sense that God says to him, push them out, because you know that animals generally, when you open the cage, they generally go out.
Sure.
And in this case, you could do it homiletically like we did before, that, you know, while they were in this womb, in this protected thing, they were fed, they don't want to go out and fight. And but also, like in my Far Side version, it's like reanimate them.
Yeah.
Like put them back into life. Again, here, the land of Israel, the Jewish people returning to the land of Israel is also a kind of reanimation. Like God says to us, reanimate at this time. And that's not so easy. Many of us don't want to reanimate. Some of us either want to stay in exile or want to continue to decompose by intermarrying and leaving the fold. But God says, no, I want you to be reborn in your land.
And again, the big challenge, and to go back to your question about the rainbow, is that it's a conscious act. It's not the same when we as a people, when human being in general chooses to be who they are, it's not the same as planting a seed. Right? There's a moment at which you have to decide who you are and then do the work to bring that about. And that's where I see the challenge today in our generation, is that the models of what it is to be a member of Am Yisrael have gotten us very far. But they are maybe necessary but insufficient to unfold who it is we could actually be. Right? It's as if you planted the acorn in its native soil and it turned around and you said, okay, what now? You know, we're in a very similar position. I almost said in the same boat. Then I realized.
And we have a fight, a dichotomy that you pointed out before, between entropy, which is the regression of all things, the breakdown of all things, as opposed to kind of the energy that you put into it, the creative energy, the creative input, the procreative input, and that's what kind of Noah is set to do. But he can't hold on to the wheel. The wheel's shaking. It's too much. And in fact, somehow after that first production, after first planting those beautiful fields, misuses that gift of life. I mean, but he's got a son, though.
Right? He's got a son. He's got three of them. You know, only one really works out of it. Next one, two.
Right.
No, and part of that is the process of the unfolding over generations. I mean, there's a real deep tension in what it is to be a human being, because part of us is like the acorn. Right? There is something which is handed down, not on a conscious level.
And does the acorn, by the way, exist? How does it keep on existing? It keeps on existing because it has an internal supply of energy. Or it has that internal little bit that it could keep going on. And then it needs that outside to really grow into a tree.
And not only that, but you know, the process of growth and change only happened through flowering. I mean, not to carry the genetic metaphor too far, but there would be no evolution if everything remained as a seed. And in the same way, I mean, in many ways, this story of Noah is a turning point in human cultural evolution. And we, in following that story through his son, Shem, all the way through Abraham to our very day, is that that's really the struggle that we're engaged in right now. What is the next stage of human evolution? And I'm not talking biologically specifically. To me, it's an evolution of consciousness, right? And going back to that notion of the rainbow, why is the rainbow so unique? Because it is a natural phenomenon which truly does not exist unless you observe it. right? In the same way, what we're trying to do is bring about a consciousness that can make God real in the world. What do you mean can make God real in the world? God's real in the world. God created the world.
And we are evolving into that, but we're also, so we're chadesha, meaning we're renewing days, but also there's an element of kekedim, as in the past. One of the great experiences that I had in my life is that I was flown down to next to a lot to see some of the solar power, the solar fields. Catching sun.
Phenomenal.
When I went down there, I also got a chance to meet Dr. Elaine Soloway, who took one of the seeds that was found at Masada and was able to grow a day tree from the time of Yair Ben Eliezer, from the folks who revolted.
2,000 years ago.
Right. And was able, with the help of... what do you call those? Like hydrocortisone is a what? What is that called again?
Steroid.
A steroid, with the help of steroids, to help reanimate.
Yes.
They had a few seeds. They wouldn't go. They wouldn't pop.
Yep.
But she helped one. One went. And you know what they call it?
I was going to ask you the question. That's right. Metushalach.
That's right. Metushalach. That's right. And I got to see that tree. I got to see that tree. And that was maybe 10 years ago. And I'd love to see how that tree is doing now. And she told me back then that the only problem with this date tree is that it couldn't get a date. There was no female to this date tree yet. So they were thinking about that. And they were really trying to find the original Judean date palm.
Right.
And there was an element there in Dr. Elaine Soloway, and in the seed was like all of Zionism and all of this rebirth that we're talking about. In one, it was like the ancient days reborn through the new technologies with these new people, and we're back. We're back on this land.
Well, it's funny you use that word, you know, Chai Shemeno Kedem, right? Like you should renew our days as in days of old. Kedem is a very funny word. Maybe days of old, true, but what's Kedima mean?
Forward.
Right.
Right.
And this is the essence of what it is to be Am Yisrael, is that we are a people who is oriented toward building a future that we feel our past demands. So in order to actually bring about this messianic vision that we put into the world to realize, we have to be deeply engaged in our past, but we can't be backwards looking.
Right.
Right.
And there are people like that that want that. Well, they wanna...
And that was the great power of the Zionist movement. Here we are sitting in the Begin Center. It's worth, you know, the Chavod Lachsanya, you know, to speak about the greatness of a generation of leadership who was deeply rooted in the past. And I'm sure you've read and heard in the speeches of Menachem Begin, the fact that he felt the past was demanding of him that he build a better future.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's the essence of what we're about.
One of the advantages that generation also had was the clear-eyed vision of the Holocaust, and that kind of scared them into the realization that something has to be done. We have an extra challenge right now, which is that our own success has caused us to sometimes like doubt how urgent the needs are, and that's a problem that this generation
sometimes
faces.
It's a little bit too easy to be a Jew these
that's
days.
Right, that's right. It's like first world problems, you know. It's like
it's
like we're here, we're now. It's all here. Like, but do we want the next step? One of those examples of people not always wanting the next step is the Temple Mount, for example, and building the temple. And another example is the conference that's happening today, a real solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. And one of the options that's being discussed today is the Jordan option here at the Begin Center. I just want to make a few last plugs here. And we were talking a lot about kind of deconstruction and
reconstruction.
Reconstruction. If you wanna feel with your hands the ability to construct something, of course, make Aliyah. Go to Nefesh B'Nefesh, nefeshbenefesh.org.il. But if you can't do that right now, go to jbrick.com. Buy yourself a beautiful Lego set, Jewish Lego
does
set.
Does he have Noah's Ark?
I don't know. Yitzi, do you have Noah's Ark?
And if not, why not?
That's right. No, and if not, we demand it. That's right. We demand a
we
Noah's
the
Ark. That's right. And it's got to have all the levels with the
and the little
the
animals.
That's right. They got to go 2x2. All right. So we'll
seven
definitely.
By seven.
So you're 7x7. We'll have to ask Yitzi at jbrick.com, great Lego, Jewish Lego sets to make that. But go check out that site. Tell them I sent you.
And the Tower of Babel to boot.
Absolutely. And one that you could just
Jenga.
You could Jenga.
Jenga, that'd be great.
By the way, I'll never forget that when I was in New York City in 2001 and saw those towers come down, I remember these verses. I know I'm not making that overt connection, but I'm saying that there was certainly the sense that like the towers of this international language of money like came down. I'm not in any way justifying anything like that, but those verses
it's evocative.
It was exactly evocative. I also want to thank the good people at Janglo.net who make order in coming to the land of Israel, living in the land of Israel, and getting the stuff that you need in your language to make it happen. We make Aliyah to the land of Israel. We keep making Aliyah here. Janglo.net really helps us out. Thank you so much, Zev, for your great invention. There's a guy that just came out of Yeshiva University and created.
Made it happen.
Made it happen and created a thing that wasn't there before ex nihilo.
To serve other people.
To serve other people. He's a good man. He's a very, very good man. And Janglo is a great product. Of course, the Land of Israel Network provides you with great shows, including your other show, The Jewish Story.
Yeah, we're loving it.
That's right. You're doing a great job. I listen to your show. It's fabulous. And it's great to have you on this show as well. Who else do we want to thank today? The good folks at Hebron. Okay, the good folks at Hebron, that's where I work, the Jewish community of Hebron. Visit us at hebronfund.org. Come on one of our fantastic tours and connect, connect, connect. Hebron means connection. That's what it means. Hebron means lehitchaber, to connect. And finally, the sponsor of our show, which is Techelet, Techelet.com, the blue string, which is the blue string on the flag of Israel that you see, the blue lines. It is the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, the knowledge that's flowing down to return to our ancient ways that we talked about, looking forward but hearkening backwards. And
at a snail's pace.
Good one. And I can tell you that I wore my brand new Techelet Talit over Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Hoshana Rabbah, Shemini Atzeret, and my son, 6 years old, and I learned this from Meir Eisenman, one of my great teachers, that your child, my little boy, my 6 year old boy, wears full on tchelet. He doesn't wear, no, okay, I'm not going to hurt anybody's feelings, but still, no galut tzitzit, okay? He's not wearing no galut tzitzit. He's wearing full on in the land. And I told him, look, an animal had to die. Animals had to die, sacrifice themselves for your tchelet tzitzit. You can't just chuck this now on the floor when you're coming in the house. You got to treat it with kavod, with respect. And that's an awesome thing. I also want to thank our good friends, the Jack, who dedicates the show to his wife Lillian and their great children, and my friend Sarah, and the good folks in Brooklyn that help donate to the show by going to YishaiFleisher.com and donating there. Thank you so much. I miss you guys. The truth is, the bug is back.
You thinking about New York City?
I got L.A., New York, San Francisco. Uh-oh. The bug is back. I gotta get on the airplane. I need
it. That's so far from my mind.
It's time to get on the road. The road is a thing, and I need to
God
get back
you
on the road,
man. I'll be here in the home front.
I gotta get on the arc, you know. Get on the arc. That's what I gotta do. That's also an element of it. You gotta get on the. And when you go to America, you're connecting to a different Judaism. Some
that
of them
true.
Are connected to Israel, but some of them are still.
I have
in a
the great
different
merit
time.
That they come here to connect to me.
Amen, amen. Of course, you can visit people and listeners to the show have come visited me, and certainly Rabbi Mike Foyer.
I was speaking about Pardes.
Pardes. People come to your to yeshiva recently. I know some of listeners. Recommend other people to come and meet you at Pardes. Definitely do that. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show, the Land of Israel Network. Thank you. Thank you to the Begin Center. Thank you to Rabbi Mike Foyer. Thank you for being there with us. Be strong. Be connected. Don't be afraid of anybody. Write us an email. My email is yishai@thelandofisrael.com.
Rav Mike@thelandofisrael.com.
Rav Mike@thelandofisrael.com. Stay tuned. Stay connected. Stay strong. And stay part of the story. God bless you. Shalom.
Martyrdom does not end something, said Indira Gandhi. It is only a beginning. And for me, each episode is a new beginning. Because I'm telling a story of the past, set to build a present identity that's motivated to make the future of which we dream. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.com.